Thus Spoke Zarathustra, Third Part. You look aloft when you long for exaltation, and I look downward because I am exalted. Who among you can at the same time laugh and be exalted? He who climbs on the highest mountains laughs at all tragic plays and tragic realities. Zarathustra, Book 1, Reading and Writing. Chapter 45. The Wanderer. Then, when it was about midnight, Zarathustra went his way over the ridge of the isle, that he might arrive early in the morning at the other coast, because there he meant to embark. For there was a good roadstead there, in which foreign ships also liked to anchor. Those ships took many people with them who wished to cross over from the Happy Isle. So when Zarathustra thus ascended the mountain, he thought on the way of his many solitary wanderings from youth onwards, and how many mountains and ridges and summits he had already climbed. "I am a wanderer and mountain climber," said he to his heart. "I love not the plains, and it seems I cannot long sit still. And whatever may still overtake me is fate and experience. A wandering will be therein, and a mountain climbing. In the end, one experiences only oneself. The time is now past when accidents could befall me, and what could now fall to my lot which would not already be mine own? It returns only, it comes home to me at last, mine own self, and such of it has been long abroad and scattered among things and accidents. And one thing more do I know. I stand now before my last summit, and before that which has been longest reserved for me. Ah, my hardest path must I ascend. Ah, I have begun my most lonesome wandering. He, however, who is of my nature, does not avoid such an hour. The hour that says to him, 'Now only do you go the way to your greatness. Summit and abyss, these are now comprised together. You go the way to your greatness. Now has it become your last refuge, what was hitherto your last danger. You go the way to your greatness. It must now be your best courage that there is no longer any path behind you. You go the way to your greatness. Here shall no one steal after you. Your foot itself has effaced the path behind you, and over it stands written, impossibility. And if all ladders henceforth fail you, then you must learn to mount upon your own head. How could you mount upward otherwise? Upon your own head and beyond your own heart, now must the gentlest in you become the hardest. He who has always much indulged himself, sickened at last by his much indulgence. Praises on what makes hearty. I do not praise a land where butter and honey flow. To learn to look away from oneself is necessary in order to see many things. This hardiness is needed by every mountain climber. He, however, who is obtrusive with his eyes as a discerner, how can he ever see more of anything than its foreground? But you, O Zarathustra, would view the ground of everything and its background. Thus must you mount even above yourself, up and upwards, until you have even your stars under you. Yea, to look down upon myself and even upon my stars, that only what I call my summit, that has remained for me as my last summit. Thus spoke Zarathustra to himself while ascending, comforting his heart with harsh maxims, for he was sore at heart as he had ever been before. And when he had reached the top of the mountain ridge, behold, there lay the other sea spread out before him, and he stood still and was long silent. The night, however, was cold at this height, and clear and starry. "I recognize my destiny," said he at last sadly. "Well, I am ready. Now has my last lonesomeness begun. Ah, this somber, sad sea below me. Ah, this somber, nocturnal vexation. Ah, fate and sea, to you must I now go down. Before my highest mountain do I stand, and before my longest wandering. Therefore must I first go deeper down than I ever ascended, deeper into the plain than I have ever ascended, even into the darkest flood. So wills my fate. Well, I am ready. Whence comes the highest mountains? So did I once ask. Then did I learn that they come out of the sea. That testimony is inscribed on their stones and on the walls of their summits. Out of the deepest must the highest come to its height. Thus spoke Zarathustra on the ridge of the mountain where it was cold. When, however, he came into the vicinity of the sea and at last stood alone among the cliffs, then had he become weary on his way and eager than ever before. Everything as yet sleeps, said he, even the sea sleeps. Drowsily and strangely does its eye gaze upon me, but it breathes warmly, I feel it, and I feel also that it dreams. It tosses about dreamingly on hard pillows. Hark, hark, how it groans with evil recollections or evil expectations. Ah, I am sad along with you, you dusky monster, and angry with myself even for your sake. Ah, that my hand has not strength enough. Gladly indeed would I free you from evil dreams. And while Zarathustra thus spoke, he laughed at himself with melancholy and bitterness. What, Zarathustra, said he, will you even sing consolation to the sea? Ah, you amiable fool, Zarathustra, you too blindly confiding one! But thus have you ever been, ever have you approached confidently all that is terrible. Every monster would you caress, a whiff of warm breath, a little soft tuft on its paw, and immediately were you ready to love and lure it. Love is the danger of the most lonesome one, love to anything, if it only live. Laughable, verily, is my folly and my modesty in love. Thus spoke Zarathustra, and laughed thereby a second time. Then, however, he thought of his abandoned friends, and as if he had done them a wrong with his thoughts, he upbraided himself because of his thoughts. And forthwith it came to pass that the laughter wept. With anger and longing wept Zarathustra bitterly. Chapter 46. The Vision and the Enigma. Segment 1. When it got abroad among the sailors that Zarathustra was on board the ship, for a man who came from the Happy Isle had gone on board along with him, there was great curiosity and expectation. But Zarathustra kept silent for 2 days, and was cold and deaf with sadness, so that he neither answered looks nor questions. On the evening of the second day, however, he again opened his ears, though he still kept silent. For there were many curious and dangerous things to be heard on board the ship, which came from afar and was to go still further. Zarathustra, however, was fond of all those who make distant voyages and dislike to live without danger. And behold, when listening, his own tongue was at last loosened and the ice of his heart broke. Then did he begin to speak thus: To you, the daring venturers and adventurers, and whoever has embarked with cunning sails upon frightful seas. To you, the enigma intoxicated, the twilight enjoyers, whose souls are allured by flutes to every treacherous gulf. For you dislike to grope at a thread with cowardly hand, and where you can divine, there do you hate to calculate. To you only do I tell the enigma that I saw. The vision of the most lonesome one. Gloomily walked I lately in corpse-colored twilight, gloomily and sternly with compressed lips. Not only one sun had set for me. A path which ascended daringly among boulders, an evil, lonesome path which neither herb nor shrub any longer cheered, a mountain path crunched under the daring of my foot. Mutely marching over the scornful clinking of pebbles, trampling the stone that let it slip, thus did my foot force its way upwards. Upwards, in spite of the spirit that drew it downwards towards the abyss, the spirit of gravity, my devil and archenemy. Upwards, although it sat upon me, half dwarf, half mole, paralyzed, paralyzing, dripping lead in mine ear, and thoughts like drops of lead into my brain. O Zarathustra, it whispered scornfully, syllable by syllable, you stone of wisdom! You threw yourself high, but every thrown stone must fall. O Zarathustra, you stone of wisdom, you sling stone, you star destroyer, yourself threw you so high, but every thrown stone must fall. Condemned of yourself into your own stoning, O Zarathustra, far indeed threw you your stone, but upon yourself will it recoil. Then was the dwarf silent, and it lasted long. The silence, however, oppressed me, and to be thus in pairs, one is verily lonesomer than when alone. I ascended, I dreamt, I thought, but everything oppressed me. A sick one did I resemble, whom bad torture wearies, and a worse dream reawakens out of his first sleep. But there is something in me which I call courage. It has hitherto slain for me every dejection. This courage at last bade me stand still and say, dwarf, you or I. For courage is the best slayer, courage which attacks. For in every attack there is a sound of triumph. Man, however, is the most courageous animal. Thereby has he overcome every animal. With sound of triumph has he overcome every pain. Human pain, however, is the sorest pain. Courage slays also giddiness at abysses. And where does man not stand at abysses? Is not seeing itself seeing abysses? Courage is the best slayer. Courage slays also fellow suffering. Fellow suffering, however, is the deepest abyss. As deeply as man looks into life, so deeply also does he look into suffering. Courage, however, is the best slayer, courage which attacks. It slays even death itself, for it says, was that life? Well, once more. In such speech, however, there is much sound of triumph. He who has ears to hear, let him hear.